St. Patrick's Day falls on a Saturday, and Milwaukee in particular got the memo to go all out. Plenty of green beer to go around, lots of festivities at Irish pubs, traditional dancing, and of course, street parties and block parties. Here with us on Wisconsin Weekend, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Brian Witt is our guide to all things Irish. He is the cultural exhibits coordinator for the Milwaukee Irish Festival that happens every August. He showcases pieces of Irish heritage through music, history, archaeology, art, and more. Brian, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
People from many backgrounds honor the Irish this weekend. What are people celebrating?
Basically, they're celebrating the feast day of the patron saint of Ireland, but it's much more than that. It goes probably to the point that one out of every five people in the United States have a claim to Irish ancestry. And, just think, one-fifth of the country claim that, they're descended from an island that had at its top no more than 8 million people. So what's not to celebrate at that point?
Is it about... Yeah, is it about wearing green, or do people have a deeper understanding of this holiday?
Some people, it is about wearing green. They're Irish on one day of the year. that's fine. I mean, it gives them a connection to something that, that's a little bit intangible. I mean, we can tell people, this is... we're celebrating Patrick, but a lot of times you're just celebrating our heritage. And, even if it's a tenuous tie to the heritage, we're still celebrating it.
Help us understand this celebration in Milwaukee in particular and why it is so important to Milwaukee.
Well, in Milwaukee, we have what's called the green season. John Gleason from... University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, who's used to be the head of the Celtic Studies program there, about 30 years ago dubbed it the green season because it's no longer a day, it's no longer a week, it's about a month and a half. So we had the parade in Milwaukee last weekend. And going back, you referenced at the top of the show that it's the 175th anniversary of the first St. Patrick's Day parade. And with all things, there's a great story behind it. It was a political move, for the most part, by a German-Dutch priest by the name of Martin Kundig, who also went out and founded a number of Irish parishes in the greater Milwaukee, actually southeastern Wisconsin area. And he decided that it would be really great if Milwaukee had the Archdiocesan See. And we were competing against, at that time, Green Bay and Prairie du Chien. And so he gathered up the Irish out to Watertown, down to the Racine-Kenosha border, Walworth, Germantown, wherever he could find Irish, Ozaukee County. In 1843, the president of the village at the time was Solomon Juno. He also owned the newspaper, the Milwaukee Sentinel. And they made sure that the press clippings about this fantastic celebration of Irishhood was made known to the heads of the American Catholic Church based in Baltimore, and 95% of them were Irish. So if you're going up against two French towns and a place that has such an outstanding, exhilarating delivery of Irishness, where were you? Are you going to go with the people from your own background or with the French people?
No, he rolled out a whole PR marketing campaign, it sounds like, back in the 1800s.
Right, and a little later that year, the Archdiocesan See was sited in Milwaukee, and that actually made put Milwaukee on the map to being a major city in the United States. So, it was political. I mean, there's always politics, even in something as innocuous as the St. Patrick's Day Parade.
You have Irish heritage. Your mother is Irish-Canadian. How did you connect with that part of your culture growing up?
My mother. She used to sing us songs. She grew up in a part of Canada, in Pontiac County, Quebec, which at one time was 98% Irish. It's on the Ottawa River. and on both sides of the river, there were Irish communities up and down. And when her family first got here, they were still Irish speakers, Gaelic speakers. And, you know, she still had some Gaelic words, but she had no idea that they were Gaelic words. To her, they were just words that everybody in the valley spoke. And, you know, on St. Patrick's Day, she'd give us little pins to wear, get us a green something to wear, and send us to school. So, and after that, you know, when I got older, I discovered that there's this whole thing about Ireland that I did not know. And I was, I was just excited to dive in. You know, I was trained as a historian, so that's one of the reasons that I get so excited about what I do at Irish Fest.
Brian Witt is our guide to all things Irish. He is the cultural exhibits coordinator for the Milwaukee Irish Festival that happens every August, and he showcases pieces of Irish heritage through music, history, archaeology, art, and so many more areas. How are you celebrating St. Patrick's Day? What's your plan? Do you have a long tradition in your family, or is this the first year you're really embracing the holiday? 800-642-1234. Tell us about your plans as you head out tomorrow for St. Patrick's Day. You can also send it via email to ideas@wpr.org. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Brian, you develop cultural exhibits for the annual Wisconsin Irish Festival. How do you teach the heritage through music and art?
Well, we focus on many things. At the festival grounds, which is on the Summerfest grounds in downtown Milwaukee, we have a seven-acre village where we highlight many of the things in Irish culture. Irish genealogy, Irish theater, we have live theater, we have lectures about the Irish. We have the Roots tent, which focuses each year on one aspect, and this year's going to be the Nova Scotia and the Tradfest. Then we also have the Village Pub, which plays a variety of music. We have the Harp tent. The harp is the national symbol of Ireland, and you know, I must say that I appreciated the hearing the harp music at the start of the show too. And we educate people by letting them not realize they're being educated. One thing that people want to know is where did I come from? I mean, 23andMe and the Ancestry.com are doing land office business right now because people want to know what their ancestral roots are. And other ways that they want to find out is actually going out and discovering who, where their family may have come from and what their family may have gone through. And that's one of the things we like to highlight each year.
What is your favorite part of the village?
Well, it has to be the cultural exhibits tent. We're such an eclectic. Oh, wait, that's mine, too. Yeah. just the village in total. I mean, many years ago, about 28 years ago, we started something called Curragh racing. The Curraghs are these Irish boats that are used to transport between the islands. And what we use is a navagh, which is a carry-style boat that we use for racing. There's probably about 25 different styles of Curraghs. It was something that I knew about, but until I actually got in one, I didn't know how the heck they were navigated. There's no rudder. You use 2x4s for oars. I mean, it's just, it's an incredible thing, you know. So,
Have you practiced with it?
Oh, I used to actually do rowing, but that was back when I was younger. And 28 years ago, I was in much better fit shape.
Now you just admire it from afar, huh?
Yeah, I can appreciate it. I can say I used to do that too. You know, I don't have to constantly do everything that I did when I was a young man.
How long does the village take to set up, or is it really kind of set up all year round?
No, we start the Thursday a week prior to the festival opening, and we do construction for the better part of 6 days. And then the Monday after the festival, it all comes down in about 12 hours. Mm. So it's one of these things that, it's a great endeavor to watch as it goes up. And it's an even greater endeavor to watch. I mean, it's great to watch the endeavor to tear it all back down again and start on trucks and come back the next year and do it all over again and not the same way.
We're talking St. Patrick's Day with Brian Witt. He is the Cultural Exhibits Coordinator for the Milwaukee Irish Festival that happens every August. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you celebrating St. Patrick's Day tomorrow? What's your plan? Do you have a long tradition in your family, or is this perhaps the first year you're going to embrace the holiday? Where in Wisconsin are you celebrating, and what events are on your list tomorrow? Call in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation after a news update here on the Ideas Network. Your corned beef cravings may be kicking in on St. Patty's Day. Consider Jake's Deli, which is an institution in Milwaukee. It's been serving up corned beef sandwiches on North Avenue since 1955. We're learning about the Irish traditions in Milwaukee and all around Wisconsin ahead of St. Patrick's Day. It's Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Brian Witt stays with us. He is the Cultural Exhibits Coordinator for the Milwaukee Irish Festival, showcasing pieces of Irish heritage through music, history, archaeology, and art. Getting your plans as well on St. Patty's Day at 800-642-1234. What's your favorite Irish or St. Patrick's Day tradition? What foods or activities do you associate with Irish heritage? What do you appreciate about the culture? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Brian, we see places really trying to push their corned beef and cabbage right now, their corned beef sandwiches, especially all over Milwaukee. What foods should we associate with people who are Irish?
Well, corned beef is, has been adopted by the Irish. There's no doubt about that. potatoes. I don't care where I've gone to visit my cousins in North America, but potatoes are always a part of at least one meal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the funny thing is that potatoes and another one, soda bread, which are very popular for the Irish, neither one is native. Both of them are native to the Americas, not to Ireland. But both are play a very big role in the Irish life nowadays.
Well, because
Sorry.
Take us back to the potato famine that happened in Europe in the 19th century.
Yeah, the potato famine started when the first crop that people were pulling out of the ground were rotting, and the Irish tenant farmers were living on, well, they're subsisted on up to 9 pounds of potatoes a day. I mean, that's what their diet was, plus some buttermilk. They didn't eat meat, so. The potatoes were something that were a real staple and the only real food that they had. Meat was a product that was not available to the average Irish person, and it was something that you might have once a year if lucky. But at the same time, those Western Irish people, of which I'm descended, grew up strong and healthy and robust. But when the crops started failing, they were raising cash crops. The tenant farmers were farming in as little as 1 acre of land. And, they had up to, 12, 14 people in a household. So when their staple food crashed, they were still sending food over to the landlords. It's essentially sharecropping, and up to 2 million people died as a failure of the potato. Ireland dropped from over 8 million people down to about 6 million people in 2 years, and then even more people. It was actually dropped to about 4 million after the continued immigration that went to the Americas, Canada, and a lot of the cities in England. As well.
What did those early Irish families look like in America?
A lot of them came over here didn't knowing English. The Irish was our main language. The Gaelic language was the language of what they spoke, and and when a lot of them came over, especially to the cities like Boston and New York, they were in a completely different environment, and they came in and they're living in an urban area, whereas before they'd be in a very not desolate, but it wasn't there weren't a lot of people, and the population wasn't that great, and people were able to still still not really see the neighbors, have to see the neighbors all the time, and all of a sudden they're forced into conditions that were completely different. They had to adapt, and that they did.
What did their immigration look like in Wisconsin?
In Wisconsin, actually, Milwaukee first saw the Irish coming over in the early 1830s. They came in and filled in the Third Ward, which was a swamp. They came in after the first national. Milwaukee was a place where land prices were jacked up because people came in the wintertime and saw this wonderful area. They came back in the summer and discovered that their land was 3 feet underwater, and a lot of people lost money. And so the Irish came in and they started filling in the Third Ward and then the other parts of Milwaukee. So that was even before the famine. So active Irish immigration to the States started both the Irish Protestants and the Irish Catholics. Thomas Addis Emmett, who was a member of the United Irishmen, came over to the United States, and he supported Andrew Jackson, so he brought as many Irish people over here. Andrew Jackson's election, because Jackson's parents were from Northern Ireland, was a celebration of Irish American joining together, both Protestants and Catholics. So that was one of the first outreaching of to the Irish community, and it made a big difference. And that also helped set up probably the American political system to this day, where you can still see a lot of Irish in if you look. I mean, in the 1940s, after World War II, a lot of Irish came back to Milwaukee because of the GI Bill, and a lot of them became lawyers, and a lot of them became the judges in Milwaukee County and throughout the state. In Wisconsin, the immigration started in the 1830s, as I said, just like it did in Milwaukee, and it spread all around. The town of Erin in Washington County was very Irish. There's an entire section of, I didn't realize this until a few years back, but if you go up 94, Reedsburg, London Station, that entire area, it's almost like an Irish highway. There are all these different places that the Irish had immigrated to, and they set up farming.
You can follow the trail.
You can follow the trail all the way up to to La Crosse and farther north. There's a town called Erin, just north of La Crosse. It's spelled E-R-I-N, but it's pronounced Erin by the natives.
Noted. All right. Brian Witt is with us. He is a cultural exhibits coordinator for the Milwaukee Irish Festival, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your favorite Irish or St. Patrick's Day tradition? What foods or activities do you associate with Irish heritage? What tradition do you keep alive in your family? What tradition do you have where you live in your community? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Brian, how do you describe the reputation of people assigned the first Irish immigrants in America? What was the reputation like?
Depends on where you were. In New York City, where a lot of the Irish came over, the freed black slaves of were associated with the Dutch did not want to be anywhere near the Irish because they brought the pig in the house, and their conditions were considered squalid. Excuse me. And In Wisconsin, people generally, well, depends, generally thought that the Irish were dependable, hardworking people. But at the same time, at one point in Milwaukee County's history, 90% of the population in the county jail, which at that time was at what is now the current Cathedral Square, was Irish. A lot of that was for drunkenness. A lot of that was for unpaid debts. The Irish did have a reputation for fighting, and, you know, you can talk about stereotypes, but stereotypes do have a basis in something. And with the Irish, they, you know, they did like to take on their German neighbors here in Milwaukee. In mm-hmm. fact, one Irishman walked into a German bar on Water Street, and he started singing, and he wouldn't stop, and they tried to stop him. So next thing, there were a lot of people who poured in from the Third Ward and started a big fight, and I think they arrested about 40 people that day. But they would just go in to argue just because the Irish do like a good argument.
And where did green beer come from?
Where will it go and that one will it die?
No, Brian, tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, I mean, people talk about, you know, Irish beer, and I was told a story by Danny O'Donohue here in Milwaukee that he had a number of bars at one point, and he also worked at Miller Brewing, and we had just started the parade in Milwaukee. And the people at Miller said, well, you know, I want to do something special for the Irish in Milwaukee. Do you think green beer? And Danny said, why not get a drink that stuff? But, you know, somebody might. And it did catch on. But, you know, so it was done in honor of, you know, trying to honor the Irish. But, you know, gosh, why destroy good beer by putting food coloring in it? I mean, and since then, you know, it's one of the things where, you know, people are like, you know, I'm Irish today, I'm drinking green beer. And I think there's been an abatement of that in recent years. People have discovered that there's actually Irish beers out there, like Guinness and Harp and Smittix and other things that are actually real Irish brews. And they've become, you know, nowadays if you look, you can see Guinness ads on TV all the time. Whereas 30 years ago, you probably only saw Guinness if you managed to go into an Irish bar or if you happened to go over to Ireland.
I could imagine that Irish pubs around Milwaukee are feeling a lot of pressure to make the day very special.
They are, and Irish pubs in Milwaukee have done a great job, as have Irish pubs all over the state of Wisconsin. One of the things I do is I list events across the state for the Shamrock Club of Wisconsin, and you know, the bands playing and things that are going on throughout the state, and it's there's an awful lot going on. I mean, there's I think tomorrow there's something on the order of 16 parades alone, including Madison's. And Madison has a great history of doing things Irish. The Irish Music Association, Celtic Music Association, in Madison is one of the best Irish music groups in the country. Everybody goes out to celebrate. People plan, and you know, not to be too crass about it, this is their biggest bar day of the year. I mean, and you know, if you own a business, you plan for your customers. And I think that they're very happy with you know, the fact that there's so many people wanting to be Irish that day.
Well, I think I also read somewhere that Milwaukee Public Transit will be offering free rides after 6 p.m. tomorrow.
Yes, and that's
which gives you some indication.
Yeah, and that's something they've been doing. They do it for New Year's Eve as well. And you know, I when I first heard that, I wasn't sure if I should be happy that they do it or be a little bit offended. But, you know, there's that part of me that's like, oh, we don't all just drink. I don't drink that much at all anymore.
Tell us about the Shamrock Club of Wisconsin.
Well, the Shamrock Club started in 1960, and it started to... it actually became a focal point for the Irish themselves in Wisconsin, because immediately we had chapters in Dane County, La Crosse, Rock County, and the Fox Cities and the Green Bay. So, I mean, it gave people a chance to not only funnel their Irishness into something, which is something that, you know, we always had Irish here. We always had people celebrating. But then nobody really had an idea of how to take that next step beyond. And the Shamrock gave them that. They used to do chartered airline trips to Ireland, and that was huge. That was huge business. This is back before airlines would take people over to Ireland directly. And when the airlines actually found out how much organizations like the Shamrock Club were making off of these flights, they said, well, maybe we should start up a regular delivery of people to Ireland. And they kind of put us out of business for that.
Is there a rivalry between Green Bay and Milwaukee at all on the tradition of St. Patrick's Day?
Not at all. We all celebrate together. I've marched in the parades in different cities because ours is always a Saturday before in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And I've marched in the parades in different cities because, it's a great way to celebrate together and show a sense of unity. We send our color guard, pipes and drums up to march in the New London Parade, which was named New Dublin this week, as it has been for the last 30 years. It's one of the biggest parades in Wisconsin generally, and it's especially the biggest parade in northern Wisconsin, so northeastern Wisconsin. So there's not a great rivalry. People like the fact that there is a culture that they can defer to, that people can help them celebrate.
How many are in your color guard, pipes, and drums?
It fluctuates. At our top, we were probably at about 60. Right now, we're down a bit due to people graduating from college and such, and we're probably down to about 35. But that goes mainly because it's the flag bearers stay, but the pipers grow. Big shots.
And so you perform in parades around the state?
Yes, I do.
And what is your role in the color guard?
I have no role in the color guard. I'm just there
as a supporter.
Celebrator, yeah.
So, Brian, what is your favorite parade, St. Patrick's Day parade?
Oh, it'd be the Milwaukee. It's a great celebration. It's a very large parade. It's almost 2 miles long. And it gives us a chance to get everybody prepped up for the next week. This year our Grand Marshal, because of the 175th anniversary of the founding of the Milwaukee Archdiocese, was Archbishop Jerome Listecki. It was a bit cold at the end of the parade because I marched it twice because I marched it to the end of the parade route and came back and was taking pictures along the route. So
we are on a tour with Brian Witt this hour. He is cultural exhibits coordinator for the Milwaukee Irish Festival. You can join in at 800-642-1234. There is a line for you on what's your favorite Irish or St. Patrick's Day tradition? What foods or activities do you associate with Irish heritage? What tradition do you have where you live? What's on your agenda tomorrow for All Things Irish? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update right here on the Ideas Network. Shout out to Wausau, where you can do up St. Patrick's Day with a group of Irish performers at the Grand Theatre. The Young Irelanders feature former members of River Dance and Lord of the Dance. There's also a 5K through Wausau. And Green Bay, hello Green Bay, your parade kicks off at 10:30 tomorrow morning in downtown, featuring the Heritage Dance Academy Irish dancers. It is the Green Edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Brian Witt is our guide to all things Irish culture, history, He's cultural exhibits coordinator for the Milwaukee Irish Festival that happens every August. And getting your plans for St. Patrick's Day at 800-642-1234. Where are you celebrating? Do you prefer the parades or an Irish pub? Perhaps something more family-friendly like a block party? Call in 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Margot now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Margot.
Hi. I have a collection of antique St. Patrick's Day postcards from almost 100 years ago. Frequently incorporated into the design are pigs or pig-like faces on the Irish people who are depicted, showing the level of prejudice there was at one time, which seems strange when today everyone wants to be Irish. And especially on St. Patrick's Day. But your interviewee alluded to the fact that the Irish once brought pigs into the house, and I didn't understand the comment.
Oh, Margo, great question.
Connected to this prejudice that was once exemplified in the design of these cards.
Yeah, let's explore that. Brian?
Yeah, Margo, thank you. This is a great question. The Irish would raise pigs as a cash crop, and as such, the pigs were a valuable commodity. And the last thing you wanted to do is have something like your pig die, because then you would not be getting anything out of it. They didn't raise the pigs to consume them. So they would often bring, and they wouldn't bring the cow in the house, but they would bring the pig in the house, especially on cold nights, to make sure that the pig was protected. And, you know, when you get into the things like, you know, the pig-like faces, a lot of that came from Punch magazine in England, which really didn't much like the Irish to begin with. And after the Irish immigration in the 1820s to 1840s, they really developed a dislike for them. I mean, you can see that sort of caricaturing of people to this day in other ethnic groups. But it happened here in the United States, too, with the person who designed the first Santa Claus, Thomas Nast. He had an absolute hatred of the Irish, and especially the Irish Catholic Church. So, yeah, but the pigs were, as I said, the pigs were something that you wanted to make sure that you kept safe and you could sell. Because if you could sell it, you made money, and that way you could possibly purchase more land.
Margot, thanks so much for the call. Brian, tell us about the way Irish immigrants and first-generation Americans understood legal and political systems here in the United States.
Well, the Irish had an advantage over most people in that even though they didn't necessarily speak English, they understood the concept of English law, which is what American law is based on, which is one of the reasons that compared to other groups, once they became engaged in the culture, they managed to rise so quickly into levels of government. The Irish knew of how to take care of themselves in the legal system. It wasn't like they're completely baffled by it. It was something that they took to. Just a competitive spirit amongst the Irish, and we're not trying to say that the Irish are the only group that has this sort of sense of competitiveness. But they really jumped right into the politics, and they pretty much took over many areas of American political life starting in the 1800s. I mean, Tammany Hall in New York, in the American labor movement as well. So they're, if you threw a rock, you're probably going to hit an Irish politician.
Well, Matt from Wausau emailed and said, there are two kinds of people in the world, the Irish and those who wish they were. What does it mean to be Irish in America today?
To me, Irish in America today is to be a part of a global institution. There's a concept of being Irish. There's a concept of, there's a reality of being Irish, and there's the idea that we are Irish in all things or in some things. If you're just going out to celebrate on St. Patrick's Day, or if you work at different organizations throughout the country all year long, there was an upswing after the River Dance where people discovered that not only were they German, they were Irish, they were Polish, they were Irish, and all of a sudden you'd see names that they fetch the dances, dance competitions that you probably wouldn't have seen 30 years before that. Raskowski and Slowinski and such. Today, to be Irish in America is to be, it's a living thing. Many years ago, President Mary McAleese of Ireland was at the Milwaukee Irish Festival, and she said that one of the things she noticed was that there was a change in the way the Irish saw themselves, Irish Americans saw themselves, that it's not so much as something put behind glass, but as something that was actually a living, breathing thing. And, that's something that I think many Irish Americans have discovered about their roots in recent years.
Well, before we let you go, can you walk us through your day tomorrow, where we might run into you?
Tomorrow I will probably stop and see a number of my friends that are performing at various venues. We'll be at the County Clare. I'll be at Mulligan's in Franklin, since that's close to my house. I won't be out real late because, at this point in my life, I would I like to be home safely. But I have soda bread. I have my black tea. I'm pretty well set for my morning breakfast. But there's a lot of music going on tomorrow in Milwaukee and actually throughout the state. If you're looking for Irish music, tomorrow was a really great time to find it.
Oh, Brian, well, this has been so enjoyable. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. This has been my real pleasure.
Brian Witt is the cultural exhibits coordinator for the Milwaukee Irish Festival that happens every August, and he showcases pieces of Irish heritage through music, history, archaeology, art, and more. Now it is time for Wisconsin Life. Everyone is Irish on St. Patrick's Day, they say. Writer Shauna Singh Baldwin married an Irishman and discovered her own bit of Irishness at Milwaukee's annual parade.
If I knew more Canadian women of Indian origin married to American men of Irish origin, I might ask why my husband David has never felt a burning desire to take me to Milwaukee's annual St. Patrick's Day parade. His American accent gives way to Irish whenever he says, "Not at all." Finally, he gave way to my entreaties. He selected his best Kelly green shirt, and I wore a green chiffon sequin-embroidered chunni to drape around my neck on a sunny but cold Saturday in March. We joined the crowd, waving and cheering as floats, cars, and bands made the turn from Juneau Avenue to flow past the Water Street bars. "Bless you," said a huge, smiley man in a white surplice bordered in gold. Mitre in one hand, he folded David into a bear hug and said all his sins were forgiven. I thought he was dressed as the Pope, but David said he was St. Patrick, which made the forgiveness more fun. St. Patrick, I'm told, charmed the snakes out of Ireland. I grew up respecting snakes as protective rather than ignoble creatures that can trick women into errant apple-eating. So I've never been sure he was wise. Mr. St. Patrick posed for photos with a green bodysuited leprechaun and reached up to shake hands with a stilt walker in a tall green hat. When a classic car with a car dealer's ad appeared, he confessed to being a parishioner of said dealership. Smiley, auburn ringleted girls and a few young lads from what must be 20 troops of Irish dancers in this city stopped to jig for him. Their rigid, unmoving arms are symbolic of resistance to their British colonizers, a fact my Indian grandparents would understand and greatly appreciate. Seagulls circled and pounced for discarded hot dog buns. We made our way up Water Street, the better to hear the bagpipers. I overheard someone say, "I'm calling in sick on Monday." Over the music, a woman beside me in the crowd asked where had I bought my green sequin chunni. I said, on a trip to Pakistan, and made my usual joke. I'm IBM, Irish by marriage. Oh, we're all Irish today, she said, and turned back to the parade. After the bagpipers came members of a Scotch-Irish troupe brandishing swords and stomping along in kilts. Three waitresses with shamrocks painted on their cheeks spoke Spanish as they poured green beer from a barrel. Along came two African-American women carrying a banner advertising Celtic traditions. David and I posed for a photo at Duke's Bar so we could send it to my turbaned Uncle Duke in India. As we walked up Yankee Hill back to our car, David pointed out an Irish flag, noting it has the same colors as an Indian flag. Right, I said, and if you don't take me to this parade next year, I'm going anyway. Promise I will, he said. I just didn't realize we all need more Irish.